Thank you, Marshy. Last week, Marshy gave a wonderful description of unity consciousness. One phrase that struck me is when Maharshi said that in unity, the boundaries are porous. I would like to ask Maharshi to elaborate on this statement. What are porous boundaries, and what is their significance compared to the boundaries in other states of consciousness?
You may remember we had also considered, in answer to some question, something primary, something secondary. So when consciousness becomes biology, then physiology becomes primary, consciousness becomes secondary. When consciousness becomes secondary, then the basic thing is hidden from view. In order that the basic thing should not be hidden from view, should not become subordinate to the knowledge of physiology, it is necessary to give importance to consciousness. That is why consciousness-based education, consciousness-based health procedures, consciousness-based administration, consciousness-based everything. Now in the world today, consciousness is not a subject of study. It's not a subject of study, and therefore it's not a field of technology. And if consciousness is not a field of technology, then the man would never be satisfied for his desires, because he'll never be able to fulfill his desires. It is through the consciousness that the consciousness becomes primary first, and consciousness becoming primary means infinitely broad and deep field, unified field, one and many together, one and many together, this unified field, that becomes important. It's very clear in terms of this subordinate. Where from we are speaking now? We are speaking from the words of the Vedic literature. There is Smriti, Upasmriti, Puran, Upapuran. Smriti means, Smriti is what you call memory. Smriti is memory. When the memory has expressed itself into the Shruti, that is the Veda, then in the Veda, Shruti is important, Smriti is secondary. So Smriti means memory. So memory at one time is primary, memory at this other time, it is secondary. Similarly, Puran. Puran is the most ancient, eternal field of reality. It is ancient. It is always ancient. It is always ancient. So it's never modern, and it's always modern. It's modern, but the ancient is modern. Modern, but ancient is modern. So like Up and like the original. It is subordinate, Puran, and this is primary Puran. So Puran, Upra-Puran, Smriti, Upasmriti. From here we are answering this question. That one is subordinate, one is primary. One is subordinate, one is primary. So there are the three values, Shruti, Smriti, Puran. So in the Shruti, the sound is primary. The memory and the content of it, they are secondary. They are hidden from view. One is up, two are hidden. Same way in Smriti, same way in Puran. One is One is up and two are hidden. One is up and two are hidden. Only in the Vedic field, all these things are so clear and so vivid. There is no flaw in it. There is no doubt about it. The whole thing is vastly expanded and intimately unified, both the things together. Unity and diversity, unity and diversity, unity, diversity. That is why the answers from the Vedic literature is available for anything, doesn't matter what, anything. And this should be the field of knowledge which should be made lively in the awareness of every student. He should have the knowledge of everything. So we want to create education, Vedic, so that the student is free from problems, because the student life is full of problems. He wants to know this also, he wants to know this also, he wants to know this also, he wants to know this also. This I want to know, how is this, what is this, how is this, what is this. Full of questions. Student life is full of questions. Unless the total knowledge is delivered to him, he will not be able to resolve all those questions. So whatever is available, he thinks this is all the world is, and that's how he passes his life. But that is not a justice to his life. The generation has not given him justice in the field of education. That is what we are going to supply, a total field of knowledge to him. And total field of knowledge, how to define it? In any way, in many ways we can define it. One definition would be to make it a practical thing. The ability to engage total natural law to fulfill his desire. If this is done, it's enough. He got the total knowledge, he got fulfilled, he say enlightenment. He can do Buddha's enlightenment, nirvana. And this will this will make the, what you said, this will make the boundaries porous. Boundaries have to be there because it is the boundaries which are being experienced through the senses. If the eyes have to see, they have to be, they have to see the boundaries. If they hear, if the sound is to be heard, it has to be within some range, boundary. But in the Enlightenment, what has happened is that the boundless also has come up with the boundary. So, to indicate this thing, we said, aha, the boundaries have become porous. Boundaries don't dissolve. No. Boundaries will always be there as long as the body is there, as long as the senses are there to experience. So this, only what happens in the state of enlightenment is not that one stops seeing things, but one stops being things. Seeing and being both come together, and that becomes, that makes the boundaries a sort of unimportant, but they do remain there. They become not primary, they become secondary, and that's why we say the boundaries become porous. The boundaries have to be there. As long as the body is there, experience will be there, not in the state of enlightenment. One stops to see things like that. And when the things will be seen, they will be seen within boundaries. But because they will be seen melted with the unmanifest, unbounded. That's why we say it becomes sort of porous. You see, it's an expression. It's an expression just to indicate the idea that they are there, but they are sort of porous. That way we understand that phrase, huh? It's delightful. It's delightful.